It is now with great honor and privilege to introduce tonight's speaker, Paul L. from San Francisco, who will share his experience, strength, and hope with us.
Well, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. My name's Paul, and I'm an alcoholic. And I'll begin, take my watch off here so I don't run over time. Can you hear me fine? Yes? No? You can't. You need the mic. All right. I'm Paul. I'm an alcoholic. And I do not have any musical numbers this evening for you. But it's a privilege and a pleasure. I'm sure it'll start being a pleasure any moment now to share my experience, strength, and hope with you. I was a gutter drunk with nothing when I was struck sober in AA down at Santa Barbara's, where that happened to me a while back. But I have been here before. If I haven't been in this very hall, I've been in one very much like it in a town nearby here. I heard Chuck Berry play an evening of raucous rock and roll in a purple velour suit, going back and forth across this stage, I think it was. But that was back in my drinking days. So I'm not positive it was this town. Is there another veterans hall sort of like this nearby? Anyway. I've driven the road between San Francisco, where I live now. My home group is the Sunday Wrap group of Alcoholics Anonymous. We meet on Sunday evenings at 8 o'clock. On San Fernando Way, if you're in the city, please come. We have comfortable seating, good coffee, and everyone gets a chance to share. Of course, I got sober down here, right? And I moved up there. And they don't do it right up there. You know what I mean? And it took me a long time to adjust. That's, if I have any message other than AA works for a sober horse thief, I am no saint. I wish I were a better person. But because I'm sober, I have a shot at being one, and I hope the grosser aspects of my misbehavior have gone away as I got tired of overusing the amend steps. One of my besetting character defects is grandiosity. And when I moved to the north after getting sober down here and going to a lot of speaker meetings. We had speaker meetings down in Santa Barbara. They don't do that much up there. Sat in those discussion meetings and waited to be called on. Because, where I got sober, you sat in a circle. You didn't raise your hand and call attention to yourself. You waited to be called on. So it took me years to be able to speak in a discussion meeting in San Francisco. As it happens, the culture is just a little different there. You wait for you to raise your hand. Eventually, I had to surrender and do it somebody else's way. And that's... that's maybe why AA works for me, because it has enabled me to get a little bit out of my own way. So as I say, I've driven that road millions of times. I'm originally from far northern California, the Humboldt County area, and I had one drunk driving and overnight in the drunk tank under my belt when I left home and came down here to go to school. I went to UCSB for 15 years to get my BA. The problem there was I kept enrolling and then not bothering to go, because I like to drink white wine on the beaches of Santa Barbara instead of doing my homework or anything else that required application or responsibility, that put me in touch with being myself in my own skin. I was not, for whatever reason, from an early age, I was an uncomfortable child. I was not comfortable in my own skin. I didn't think I was good enough. And I wasn't being beaten. I wasn't deprived. I come from an ordinary, dysfunctional, maybe, marginally dysfunctional American family of the standard sort that many of us are from. But And I was given everything that I need. I had many advantages. I had loving parents. And then there were a couple of divorces, so I had some more loving parents. More loving parents. And maybe that was it. I had a little insecurity, perhaps, from those divorces. I have no idea. I'm also lazy. I have not done enough therapy. I haven't gotten enough outside help to know all the causes and conditions about my alcoholism. What I do know is I ended up at age 15 or 16, tap dancing to be what you wanted me to be. I was just a big people pleaser. I had no sense of myself. You really can't hear me.
Yes,
all right, I'm awful sorry. Okay, just keep telling me. Thank you, Frank. My new friend Frank, originally from my hometown. You people have been incredibly friendly here this evening and welcoming me into your midst. And before I go another moment, I do want to thank Stan and Jose Daniel, who was, I believe, not present, and anyone else on the committee who had a hand in installing me up here for the hour, or let's make it 45 minutes, that I will hold forth. I've had a wonderful time the last couple of days, and I want to thank Joe C. and his beautiful wife, Karen, for the fabulous time that they've shown me. We spent time seeing the beauty spots of Lompoc Valley today. I've known it's a lovely place, and I saw some beautiful places today and had a great time in their lovely and spacious home, and I'm very grateful. That's how I ended up here. I had to drive 5 hours here. It's a 6-hour drive to Santa Barbara, and I've done that drive hundreds of times. Dozens of them drunk. My standard was drink till 2 in San Francisco. Now I was out of cash or whatever. Get in the car and head south on 101 with my head out the window and one eye closed to keep the white line visible. So I could, I would have 8 a.m. classes to attend. I would normally not make them. I'd end up sleeping in some field in Salinas or something, as far as I could get, and a cop would wake me up. That was well before it occurred to me that I had any kind of drinking problem. Alcohol was my solution through all of that time. As I mentioned, I was a tense child, and my first drink was revelatory. Halfway through high school, it was a few chugs of Boone's Farm apple wine from a bottle I was in the passenger seat of Jack Smithers' little lime green Volkswagen, and we were getting ready to go into an awards ceremony. I was on the little high school speech team that they had there, and in that little high school I went to, and I was receiving an award that evening. And at the time I stood up to be given my trophy and have my name announced and be applauded by the crowd, the alcohol rose to my head and the lights got bright and I felt okay in my skin for the first time in a long time. And I've never forgotten that evening. And I understand now, it seems obvious to me why it was I drank every day after that. For as long as I could, well past the point that it was doing me any good or providing me any relief from my disease, but I pursued that feeling I got the first time about 15 years before, as I say, I ended up in the gutter. Well, it was the Santa Barbara gutter, and the weather's a little better than doing the same in San Francisco these days, but my life was went nowhere. Even though I'm a child with a great deal of potential, I was told. So when I left home, I expected that I would have a special life that would eventually show up for me. And I'm instead sitting at that little toilet beer bar night after night, waiting for my special life to show up, wondering why nothing ever took. When I didn't I didn't finish the classes. I couldn't keep the jobs. I was unable to form any really rewarding or successful personal relationships. I was committing petty crimes. I was catching diseases. I was driving drunk on the highways and byways of the Central Coast, among other places. Hundreds and hundreds. If I'd gotten what I deserved, I'd have been 6 feet under a long time ago. You know, but my higher power obviously was looking out for me. I didn't perish, and I didn't take anybody else with me on one of those rides. I was arrested 8 times for drunk driving. Back in the day when you could be arrested 8 times for drunk driving and not be salted away forever behind bars. I remember in particular being arrested 2 nights in succession at the same freeway exit between Santa Barbara and Goleta, somewhere after closing time at the bar, by the same cop. I was released OR the first night, and the second night he just said, "Paul, I'm disappointed." So I eventually spent 10 days in Santa Barbara County. Anybody here spent time in Santa Barbara County Jail? Well, fabulous. I love having some jail time in my story now. At the time, of course, I was terrified that I didn't know what it was going to be like. I took a big book and stuck my nose in it, and I survived my time. The first thing I did when I got out was hurry off to the bar and get myself a drink. That was a number of years before I was struck sober through no virtue of my own. I was a functioning drunk? I guess you could say I was a functioning drunk. I always had a job, a crap job. I like the ones you start about 2 or 3 in the afternoon. Taking tickets at the theater was one of my best. Not much is demanded of you, and there was all the popcorn you could eat. I didn't have much food money, and there was cash in the till towards the end of the evening that I could take for beer money. And that was me at the State Theater, across state from the old from the Granada, which still stands. And eventually, Fred Hanneman, the manager there, figured out who was ripping him off and discharged me. I would last, you know, around, 3, 4, 5 months at a job before I was either found out for my petty larceny, or just decided I didn't want to show up one evening when we were just having too much fun down at the bar. Didn't want to go in. Did a lot of fry cooking, that kind of. I sold men's clothing for a while on State Street in Santa Barbara. I liked that job because there were a bunch of old drunks in the shop. It was, you know, commission sales. So they were happy to have me passed out on the floor of the men's dressing room while they took the customers. And my special life never showed up. Eventually, I wondered. I was such a special kid. I secretly knew myself to be a little brighter than the rest of you. And I expected that at some point I would be discovered and offered a position of responsibility and reward. But people did not come down to that little beer bar looking for valuable employees. Sometimes I would take my homework. I was a college student, right? So I had books. I would take them down to the bar and stack them up next to me. And that would, have predictable consequences. Eventually, I lost the sense that it was going to get better. I remember a grim evening. It was the same crowd at the bar most nights. I would spend the rent check to stay there. I remember turning to my drinking companion one night and saying to him, "You notice that rotten feeling that's settling down on you all the time here? Well, get used to it. It's going to be like that the rest of your life." That's the way I felt. Somehow I got hooked up. I got married to another practicing alcoholic. She was a waitress. I was head chef by this time at the little prime rib restaurant. But I was a vegetarian, so naturally I worked at a prime rib restaurant. And they made me head chef because the people in the chain of command above me were heavier drinkers than I was, and they dropped off like flies. I rose to the top. So we got married. She got sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I followed her in. My ex, Shelly W., she's still sober today. We're very good friends. We're far better friends than we would ever, were ever spouses, but we got married. Well, we were having too many fights. To settle one of them, I proposed one evening, and thus we were married. She was no doubt advised against it by the alcoholics that she was meeting here at your meetings, because they knew what kind of hot property I was to acquire as a spouse. I was going to those meetings with her. I love meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. You could smoke in meetings then, for one thing. Yeah, people were drinking coffee, smoking cigarettes, yucking it up. The old Santa Barbara Lana Club there on Carrillo Boulevard. And I loved it. I laughed till I cried. You would hear amusing stories in Alcoholics Anonymous then. And I loved the meetings, but I didn't want to stop drinking. So after the meeting, she would go for coffee with you guys, and I would go to the bar. The format called for people to introduce themselves as visitors occasionally. I would come around, I would introduce myself as a visitor. And I did not get sober as a visitor. I got a little juice as a visitor. People come up to you. Come up and chat. They give you their phone numbers. They invite you to come back. I remember one guy saying, you know, Paul, I know you're not an alcoholic, but you don't need to be an alcoholic to work the steps. If you're ever interested in working the steps, you know, give me a ring. I had his number in my wallet. He's not the one I called when the time came. So I had a number of phone numbers in my wallet. And after a while, people stopped coming up as much, you know. And you know what? I'm grateful to those people today that they didn't say, you're an old drunk, you should be doing this too. That they didn't really try to recruit me. That we have a program of attraction, not promotion. People did not try to promote me. Nor did my wife, my then wife. She went, she got herself sober. She was very active in her group. She had a sponsor, lots of friends. She went early, she stayed late, and I went when I wanted to. And back then, we used to have the scrolls that had the steps and the traditions up on the wall in front of you. So I was reading those steps and reading those traditions. And you know, I had intellectual scruples. I couldn't quite agree with those steps and those traditions. It wouldn't have been right of me to attempt a membership in Alcoholics Anonymous when I knew a little better, or I couldn't. The truth was, I didn't think I was good enough. I didn't think it would work for me. All I really knew was myself from the inside. I was, if my lips were moving, I was lying to you. And I had failed so many times. You would read something about people who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. I would hear that and I would say, well, that's me. This isn't going to work for me. And I would go out to the bar. So I had my last drink, which I remember very clearly, at the old Leilani Room at the back of the Hotel California on State Street. Anybody remember that bar? It was a Hawaiian bar, same guy. It was a Hawaiian bar. And it was fabulous. It was completely lined with rattan. All the walls and the ceiling were lined with woven bamboo rattan that was grimy with, you know, decades of cigarette smoke lighting upon it. And I love that bar. There's a pool table in back. I was once thrown over in a brawl. Another great thing, I love having that in my story since I didn't break any bones that night. And the bartender was smart. She, you know, advised me to leave before the cops came, so I didn't get put in jail that night. What was I saying? Well, the Leilani one. They had a jukebox that they laid a lot in room that was full of, among other things, Linda Ronstadt songs, which I loved, to come in there, fill it full of quarters, order my beer, and listen to When Will I Be Loved? I spent many a night doing just that, and I can see the bottles in front of the mirror behind the bar, and I would fantasize about the things I was going to do, the places I was going to go, the fun I was going to have, the man I was going to be, until I ran out of cash. There was a short period where the gentleman would buy me drinks occasionally, but not long. I was not an attractive drunk. And I would make it part way home. It was difficult. I was 6 or 8 blocks. I couldn't be expected to make it all the way home. I would make it part way home, and I had my favorite little bush or two there in front of a Roommate Referrals was the name of the business that had some oleander bushes or something. I liked, there was a spot in there you could crawl into. Nobody would bother you till morning. And I probably sat there more than any other place. And she had stopped, you know, heading out in the car to look for me anymore. That was not a thing. She was not picking up after me, coming to find me, making excuses for me the next day, paying my bills. She didn't kick me out. She didn't lock the door. If I happened to make it all the way back, I could let myself in, collapse. And, you know, I would have just perished in behind one of those bushes one night, or driven off the cliff in one of those Cadillacs that I was always getting behind the wheel of somebody else's car, blind drunk, and driving them back to L.A. because they couldn't drive themselves. And I'm surprised I didn't go over the cliff. You know, just circumstances. That was not the higher power's plan to do me in that way. Eventually, my higher power did for me what I could not do for myself, and got my attention. As I say, I went to the Leilani room, and same. It was relatively early. It was just sundown, what, at 5:15 or something like that the other night. We're sitting at the house. I can't believe the sun goes down that early. It was this time of year. My sobriety birthday is January 7th. So, you know, I'm coming up on another one. Greek don't rise. I blacked out. I was not normally a blackout drinker, so far as I recall. Obviously, there's a paradox built in there. I don't recall waking up from blackouts routinely in the way that it's described in some of the stories in the book. I had gray out periods. Much of that part of my life is a complete blur. It's true, I don't remember large stretches of time, but I don't think I was strictly speaking a blackout drinker, but that night I blacked out. I do not remember what happened from the point that I sat down at the bar, and when I woke up sometime later after dark, down 12, 20 blocks down on the beach, halfway across the road, where I had been struck by a drunk driver after stepping out in front of him, crossing the road. I was no doubt looking for love in the bushes or something. And I was knocked 80 feet down the road. And you can't really see it by looking at me, but when I'm tired or I want sympathy, I limp a little bit because my right leg is now an inch shorter than my left. It used to be a quarter inch longer. But that gentleman, who I never managed to, I hired attorneys and everything, tried to get locate that man. I mean, he did a great favor. He didn't kill me, but he struck me sober. What I remember is waking up with the lights twirling and the red lights flashing and a Greek god of an ambulance attendant scooping me up, lifting me up, and shooting me full of Demerol. It's the one that gave me a big shot of Demerol. Only time I've ever had Demerol. Never forgotten that shot of Demerol. Jesus, I could see the attraction of that drug. Because I was not in pain that evening. He said, we're going to take care of you, Paul. And they whisked me off to Cottage Hospital, where sometime later, I was patched up, I was put in a body cast. I mean, I was in a cast. I was rigid. For my first year at Alcoholics Anonymous, I took up two seats at every meeting I went into, because they had to carry me in, set me on a chair, and put my foot on a chair in front, which those alcoholics were into action. They were into helping me get sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's what happened. I was wheeled into the next meeting that I went to, which was in the basement of Cottage Hospital, into which I was wheeled in a wheelchair. I raised my hand and said I was an alcoholic. And bang, I was struck sober. And I not only have not had a drink or a non-prescribed drug since then, I have not had any desire. I've not felt the compulsion. I realize there are no guarantees. I realize there's a big difference between wanting to take a drink and taking a drink. And I hope when I want to take a drink, I just don't. But the miracle descended upon me. I thought for years that I couldn't identify any particular moment of clarity, but I really can. I know that when I woke up in that hospital room, that there was a moment, probably during my conversation with my first sponsor, the man who became my first sponsor, when the thought occurred to me, as I thought I'd waited too long. I thought it was too late. I was going to lose my leg, lose that little house I had down there, lose my job, lose my wife, lose what remained of my reputation in town. It's a small town. I didn't have much of a reputation. People saw me stumbling around at night. But the thought came to me, these steps have worked for a lot of people. You know, maybe they'll work for me too. Pretty mundane stuff, right? But a miraculous transformation of my attitude towards myself and towards Alcoholics Anonymous and towards the possibility of living and having a life. You know the rest of the story. Fortunately, I don't have to tell you. I was rocketed into the fourth dimension, if you will. Or put another way, I've been given a fabulous sober life. I'm one of the lucky ones. I got sober in a time and place where there were a lot of sober alcoholics into action who made it a point to have the hand of AA there for me and took me along with them to be present and active in Alcoholics Anonymous. I cannot say that since that time I've become very knowledgeable about myself. I know a little bit more about myself, I hope, or about alcoholism. I'm not an expert. I'm not a doctor. I appreciate the fact that there's a kind of folk medicine or folk wisdom that is gathered and passed on in Alcoholics Anonymous, and it was passed on to me. And I immediately glommed on to the easier, softer way of doing Alcoholics Anonymous when my first sponsor suggested it to me. He said, Paul, we have a program of action. Quit trying to figure it out. I guess I was contributing a little too much in discussion meetings about the way Alcoholics Anonymous ought to conduct itself. And of course, they put up with it to a certain degree, but he was bold enough to tell me, flat out, you know what? It's already figured out. Why don't you just come and do it with us? Relax. Put everything else on the back burner, he said. Don't worry about getting out there and beating the bushes to have a career or make a bunch of money or make up for lost time. It'll take care of itself. Just put AA first, and everything else will take care of us. That was his pitch. AA first, relationship second, job third. He said, that's the priority you ought to have. I didn't have any relationship by that time because the marriage was shot. But, I needed to pay some attention to her and to it, and we did end up divorcing. As I say, we're no longer married, but we are very good friends. Why? Because AA has kept both of us sober since that time and given us a chance to be good friends to each other. Over time, I learned I am enough. I can, you know, I'm able to hold a job, pay the bills, had a little career, which has come and gone. I have everything that I need. I can be a functioning, worthwhile companion or friend or significant other or employee or employer, perhaps, or friend. Those are all options for me, notwithstanding my confusion and my self-centeredness and my grandiosity, because I don't have to take martinis to get me over the rough stops anymore. Instead, I can, well, for one thing, I got a sponsor. I've always had a sponsor. And if driven to it, I will go ask my sponsor what to do next. When I forget, because I have worked the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, they are part of my life. I've done the inventory steps and presumably seen what my part was in the grosser aspects of my misbehavior. And I went back to the Metropolitan, I went back to Jim D. of Metropolitan Theaters and fessed up that I'd been ripping it off for all those years and paid him back for the popcorn and the cash out of the till and all the rest of it, you know, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. I had to make those small payments. I had let, you know, I was one of those people that let the mail stack up. I was afraid to open up the bills, right? So some of them grew to alarming proportions. But with the help of that group of guys, mostly guys, but women too, who took me in hand back then, I was able to get on my feet and learn how to live as a sober citizen. And that's enough, you know. I have to admit that present circumstances, present day circumstances, cause me some concern. You know, I'm not in charge of the biosphere, but or how the species is conducting itself. But despite everything that is going on around us and the turmoil that we live in the modern age, and the intractable problems that seem to be coming down the pike, I have a fabulous sober life, you know. And I am blessed with the opportunity to be useful in a unique way to the occasional newbie or old-timer who needs an understanding ear, an understanding, non-judgmental ear. I am certainly guilty of voicing, I'm certain what I've had to say this evening has been larded in with my opinions on this, that, and the other, and I trust you will be ignoring those. The only thing that's useful is, you know, my sober experience. My sober experience is that by doing the things that I was shown to do, maybe there's a list of 10 or 12 simple little things. I was never asked to do anything illegal or particularly grueling or fattening, you know, just to show up and put a chair away if I was sitting in it, put out my hand, give out my number, give a ride, that kind of thing. And that has kept me sober all of that time. But that lands me, you know, today, wondering about what's coming down the pike. The thing that happened that opened my eyes widest in recent years in sobriety is that I always considered myself not particularly a person of faith. I am an agnostic, religiously speaking. I'm about the existence or non-existence of any particular god or goddess, but, and I do try to be quick to see where religious people are right, as our book suggests, but I have become a person of faith in AA, which is to say that I ended up acquiring a kind of bedrock optimism that if I come here and I'm transparent about who I am with you, I talk to you about who I am openly and about what's really going on with me, instead of taking a drink or a drug to step behind that kind of thing. And if I keep my trap shut enough of the time that I get to hear what you have to say, and I'm open and teachable, I hope I stay marginally teachable, but I've not done everything that has been suggested to me. Now, the last strong suggestion that I got from my sponsor was, Paul, you need to spend a little more time with steps 6 and 7. And he gave me a book I didn't want to read. And I read the bloody thing. And I learned a few things, maybe. And I didn't take a drink. And I would do that again if I need to. And I have always had the breakthrough that I need in Alcoholics Anonymous. And so I have ended up with the faith that I am likely to have that if I keep it up. If I keep coming back and doing what you're doing, and I get to the point that I am willing to surrender and do it your way again, because periodically I do have to give up some cherished notion about the way it ought to be done. If I just give it up and do it your way instead, I can get what you've got. It's good to be here. Good to be sober. Thank you for having me.
Thank you, Paul. Let's give Paul another round of applause. And thank you, Glenn and Billy, for reading for us today. Are there any other AA-related announcements?
Billy Alcoholic. I'm so happy to have this moment to say that our co-chair at the podium is turning 4 years sober tomorrow. And congratulations, Allison. You're doing a great job.
Thanks, Billy. Great announcement. Okay. To close out, Stan is going to read a vision for you.
My name's Stan. I'm an alcoholic. A vision for you. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we only know a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who's still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Get freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.